Okay, good. Welcome to Holden's 40th 4th of July talent show in support of our theme of 40 years in the wilderness. My name is Kent Burgess. I'm one of the summer program coordinators along with Barbara Rossing this summer, and we have a power-packed lineup for you this evening, beginning with four young ladies who are going to open us in the spirit of the day.
Please rise for the national anthem.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet
Thomas and Stan have two skits for us.
Skit number one.
Oh, boy, this is a hard hike.
Oh, it's hot out here, man. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm glad I brought some water. I bet I'll need it later. I'm almost dehydrated.
I'm glad I brought the bananas. We're going to be hungry.
Yeah. Hot. I brought a car door. We can always roll down the window.
Skit number two. Today, three men were lost at sea, presumed dead.
Make me 50% smarter. I'll build a raft.
Oh, I'm so tired of this island. Oh God, please make me 100% smarter. Have the coconuts on this island are. Is that a bridge?
Nothing but talent. Our next is a reading from Dwayne Landsberg.
This is a poem by Garrison Keillor called The Old Shower Stall. On these cold October mornings when the trees are going bare, and the smells of frost and fruit and wood smoke linger in the air, when my skin warms to the chill and my blood and flesh and bone are touched by old sweet memories of autumns I have known, the excitement of the senses waking up in cold dim dawn to the smell of woolen blanket and downstairs the coffee on, and my mother's voice much louder on her third and final call, and the tingling of the skin when I jump out and down the hall and ran into the bathroom across the cold wood floor and the shrinking of the loins when I stood and dropped my drawers and reached and turned the faucet on and took the bar of soap and got into that shower full of fear and shame and hope. It was an old, old shower that my father had hooked up, a nozzle on a long lead pipe that rose above the tub like a post at executions, where you're tied up with a knot, naked with your eyes shut, waiting for the fatal shot. My father was no plumber. He built the shower from plans he saw in a magazine, perhaps Modern Romance. For this shower was so sensitive and moody that if someone downstairs turned on a faucet before your shower was done, even for a second, suddenly the gentle flow of comforting warm water turned frigidissimo, and the victim stood there frozen, helpless and surprised by a sudden loss of vision as his eyeballs crystallized. And the pain throughout his body from the frostbite in the blood, and his skin turned white and rigid, and his heart stopped with a thud. But to freeze a body is gentle compared to when you boil it, which is what happened in this shower if somebody flushed the toilet. It came without a warning as you sang, la la, and scrubbed. No rumble in the pipe said this volcano would erupt. It just blew up in your face, or from behind the lava rose and hit you bending over to wash between your toes. And you sprang up in great agony and yelled and tried to run and slipped and fell down in a heap. Medium well done. Another Christian martyr in the flames trying to pray, oh Lord, forgive that person, but please, not right away. Yes, I had some spiritual moments in that shower of my youth, moments when the water seemed to thunder down with truth upon my naked body, when I had a carnal thought and enjoyed and dwelled upon it, though I knew that I should not, but allowed myself to daydream in the regions of desire. Did the Lord reach out and flush to strike me down with liquid fire? I used to think he did, but now I am older and I see the shower was a lesson in man's sweet mortality. To feel how fine, how fragile is his trembling naked form, how delicious is the water, and how briefly it stays warm. And how it may turn painful suddenly without a word, and how, though it seems unfair, this pain can be endured. And how the joyful moments seem more sweet as they go by, because you know this shower has a limited supply. I'm out of that old bathroom now. Since then, I've gotten wet in a lot of shower systems where the temperature is set by small inboard computers that keep it warm nonstop and regulate the volume and the shape of every drop in exact configuration from a trickle to barrage, steady flow, or impulsations for a thundering massage. With bath oil, beads, and vitamins mixed in, emulsified from shower heads above you and below and to the side. Six to make the shower, one to make a gentle mist, and a tape deck in the ceiling playing Chopin and Franz Liszt, and a light to make a rainbow where the shower is a prism, and all of it designed to soak out Calvinism. And the sun lamps in the ceiling and the coil in the floor maintain precision comfort, and you know there's always more hot water where this came from. Some endless reservoir that the universe has guaranteed to you, its brightest star. But as I stand in absolute luxurious delight and utter satisfaction, I know it is not right. You know it too, my friend. And so tomorrow when you rise and stand under your shower, When you acclimatize, reach for the knob marked H and turn it off. And stand in prayer. Lord, help me appreciate what soon will not be there. And may I be more thankful, more wakeful unto thee, more aware of sinful pride, my own complacency, and less inclined to take for granted the gifts I get from you. I thank you now for everyone and praise and honor and stand in your creation with proper reverent awe and look upon these wonders with a joyful spirit. Ah, and finally, in conclusion, may I just say, amen. Then open your eyes and turn on the warm and be clean again.
That's Dwayne Landsberg, respected Vancouver attorney. And our next are these two young ladies down here. Laura and Emily Brown are going to grace us with two numbers. Please welcome Laura and Emily.
Why are you telling me? I like it. That's a good philosophy. Why are you telling me? Why are you telling me? Why are you telling me my new philosophy? The teacher gave a D on last week's homework. She said, Miss Laura Brown, your grades are going down. I could have told her my new philosophy. Miss B, I'm she. Look-see, a D. Well, why are you telling me? And that's my new philosophy. Why are you telling me? My new philosophy. And like a busy bee, each new philosophy can fly from tree to tree and keep me moving. When life's a dizzy maze, on alternating days, I choose a different phrase, my new philosophy. Some philosophies are simple. Man does not live by bread alone. Some philosophies are clear. Leave your message at the sound of the tone. Some philosophies pick and choose, deciding what goes in it. Some take a lifetime, mine takes a minute. Schroeder says anything that takes only a minute can't be very lasting. For instance, Beethoven took over 2 years to complete his brilliant Ninth Symphony. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I like it. It's like a guarantee, my new philosophy. And things are sure to be a whole lot brighter. Oh yeah, that's what you think. Why are you telling me? No, I can't stand it. Now life is free and easy. Much more philosophy-y with my brand new. You know, someone has said that we should live each day of our life as if it were the last day of our life. Clearly, some philosophies aren't for all people. And that's my new philosophy.
Time waiting for that second chance, for a break that will make it okay. There's always some reason to feel not good enough, and it's hard at the end of the day. I need some distraction. Oh, beautifully memories seep from my veins, and maybe I'm deep. comfort here. So tired of the street life, and everywhere you turn, there's vultures and thieves at your back. Storm keeps on twisting, keep on building the lines that you make up for all that you lack. It don't make no difference, escaping one last time. It's easier to believe in this sweet madness, all this glorious endless that brings me to my knees in the arms of the angel. Fly away from here, from this dark old hotel room, and the endlessness that you feel. You are pulled from the wreckage of your silent reverie. You're in the arms of the angel. May you comfort here. You're in the arms of the angel. May you find some comfort here.
Next, please help me welcome Holden's own Sarah Whitehouse.
Good evening. My song selection for this evening was going to be a patriotic song, but unfortunately I'm going to have to play the one and only song that I know for two reasons. The first one being I realized the limitations on my flute and the ranges are a lot smaller than I had planned on. And secondly, it took me a long time to get in and out of my costume for the parade. So I chose to play Amazing Grace on my flute. My nose flute. No laughing, that will make me laugh and the notes won't come out.
Sarah, you can't tell people who've been at Laugh Club all week that they can't laugh. It was a little tough knowing who, because I figured that might be the toughest slot to have to follow. So I booked in here the Claudes and the Claudettes.
Hello, we're the Claudes and the Claudettes. Woo! And so we have a couple songs for you tonight. Now, the very first one, I know that you can get behind.
You know, it's an important issue.
It's an important issue we think you can get behind.
That's it.
Okay, that's it. Great, thank you. Okay.
You got it?
Yes.
Hit it, Ming.
Come on, Ming. No, this one doesn't. We just want a note. Okay. Okay, got it?
No, I don't have that note. No. What is that note again?
The note. There is something that we wish you'd take on as a vital issue. It's a case for toilet tissue, the recycled kind. It is absolutely fitting, whether standing up or sitting. We have got to stop committing environmental crime. Don't go on ignoring all the
first earthquake recorded at Holden Village.
That was unrehearsed. Okay. from the top. Go on ignoring
all the bleach and
glory. Can someone come up here and help us?
Okay.
Okay, I think we can do it now.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't go on ignoring all the bleach and chlorine. Yeah. Recycled brand.
And you will feel much better by ensuring pure air and pure water. Be an environment supporter. Let's all do the things we ought to, even on the dock.
Remember I've been saying all week how laughing relaxes you so you fall down? Now, the next song is a pretty upbeat, interesting topic. So listen up.
Hat, dedicated to Paul Santmar.
Oh, yeah, this is dedicated to Paul Santmar. He was our inspiration.
Yeah. And we will not march on this one.
don't march on this one, please. Well, we'll see. Okay, name
and
it.
Can't
it.
Dance,
we can try it. Woo! Come on, everybody. Woo!
Oh, we're radical environmentalists. Oh, we're radical environmentalists. We like clean air and clean water, just like the farmer's daughter. Oh, we're radical environmentalists. We like our veggies without pesticides and our fish without hormones placed inside. We like fish without PCBs and forests that still have some trees. We're radical environmentalists. Oh, we've automobiles that do not pollute and guns that simply do not shoot. We like lawns grown without weed and feed, and we don't like those gene splice seeds. We're radical environmentalists.
Okay, Ming, hit it.
So join these radical environmentalists who like wind power and electric cars. Recycle all your glass and paper so you can tell your maker you're a radical environmentalist.
Woo, woo, woo!
Yeah. Oh.
Only at Holden Village. I really appreciated their sharing, especially that first song about the toilet paper, because I share a bathroom with Paul Santmeyer, our environmentalist, and you might not have noticed, but we're out of toilet paper. So you might want to swing by Potty Patrol on the way home. The our next offering is Marvin Landsberg with his two daughters, Allison and Hannah. And I think they're going to play a trumpet tune.
Yeah, this is called Concert Etude, and I really should say on behalf of my daughters, they do know how to play the piano, but the problem is I didn't bring up the piano accompaniment for this piece, and so they're not playing off that. In fact, none of us have ever even seen it. But there's a few gaps in this piece when I have to rest that they're going to be filling for me. So that's their job. And if we suddenly just stop during the middle of this, you shouldn't be alarmed. It's not a medical emergency or anything. It's just more likely that we've decided to exercise some discretion and stop.
Thank you.
Steve and Carrie Ann are going to sing for us an elephant love melody. Oh, Steve. Let's see. Now I got to go look at my notes again. Stan.
Yes, sir.
Stan and Carrie Ann. Please welcome Stan and Carrie Ann.
All you need is love.
A girl's got to eat.
All you need is love.
She'll end up on the street.
All you need is love.
Love is just a game.
I was meant for loving you, baby. You were meant for loving me.
The only way of loving me, baby, is to pay a lovely fee.
Just one night, just one night.
There's no way, 'cause you can't pay.
In the name of love. One night in the name of love.
You crazy fool. I won't give in to you.
Don't. He is waiting. I can't survive without your sweet love. Don't leave me this way.
You'd think that people would have had enough of silly love songs.
I look around and I see it isn't so.
Some people want to fill the world with silly love songs.
And what's wrong with that? I'd like to know. Again, world, lift me up where we belong, where the eagles fly on a mountain high.
Love makes us act like we were fools, throw our lives away for one happy day.
We could be heroes just for one day.
You would be mean.
No, I wouldn't.
And I would drink all the time.
We should be lovers.
We can't do that.
We should be lovers. And that's a fact.
Well, nothing could keep us together.
We could steal time just for one day.
We could be heroes
forever and ever. We could be heroes forever and ever. We could be heroes just because I will always love you.
Next, we have a group offering from the Lutheran Pops.
Our entertainment tonight will draw from two Lutheran traditions, the bell choir and beer brewing. As you can see, we have our children with us, so of course we're using water. Also, since these instruments require that we have a very precise level for proper tuning, we have found that using water rather than beer has kept us from going flat. So, with no further ado, I'll turn it over.
Thank you.
Please help me welcome Holden's head waitry, David Cadero, who's going to testify to love.
I'm afraid, being my first year at Holden, I'm afraid that I was unclear of the level of frivolity at this evening's meeting, and so having worn my long underwear and long johns to the parade, I used all my frivolity up, so this actually is a very serious piece, so it's called Testify to Love.
All the colors of the rainbow, all the voices of the wind, every dream that reaches out, it reaches out to find where love began. Every word of every story, every star in every sky, every corner of creation lives to testify. For as long as I shall live, I will testify to love. I'll be a witness in the silences when words are not enough. With every breath I take, I will give thanks to God above. For as long as I shall live, I will testify to love. From the mountains to the valleys, from the rivers to the sea, every hand that reaches out, every hand that reaches out to offer peace, every simple act of mercy, every step to kingdom come, all the hope in every heart will speak what love has done. For as long as I shall live, I will testify to love. I'll be a witness in the silences when words are not enough. With every breath I take, I will give thanks to God above. For as long as I shall live, I will testify to love. As long as I shall live, I will testify to love. I'll be a witness in the silences when words are not enough. With every breath I take, I will give thanks to God above. For as long as I shall live, I will testify. Silences when words are not enough. With every breath I take, I will give thanks to God above. For as long as I shall live, I will testify to love. I'll be a witness in those silences when words are not enough. With every breath I take, I will give thanks to God above. For as long as I shall live, I will testify to love.
Thank you, David. David and Steve Wolbrecht, please welcome.
Hi, I'm David. I'm Steve. And we're part of an improv comedy troupe out of the Tacoma, Washington area where we do performances in that area. It's called Dead Gentleman Improv.
Yes.
And it's suggestion-based improv, which is where we get suggestions from the audience for the scenes that we're going to do. And so what we need from anyone who has an idea. What is a physical activity you can do up at Holden?
Iron
chopping wood.
Chopping.
All right, chopping wood. Thanks.
Chopping wood.
Thank all you enthusiastic people out there.
Yes, Mavericks, chopping wood. Okay. Well, we're gonna do a scene for you about chopping wood. But it's getting kind of late, so we're gonna try to limit our time here. So we're gonna try to do the scene. We'll do it in 30 seconds. Be really short and sweet. Can I have someone just kind of keep time? Can that be okay? Can you do it? All right. Okay. What we need you to do is we have 30 seconds. You just tell us go, and then when it counts off 30 seconds, give us like a, say, 10 seconds left, and then like a 3, 2, 1, over. Can you do that? Okay. Go ahead and tell us when to go. Chopping wood. Go.
Well, this wood today, I don't know.
Wow. Yeah, there's still more of it. Yeah, we're chopping wood.
There's always wood here in the wood lot.
Yeah, because that's where we chop wood.
Hence the creative name.
Yes, huh? Oh, my knee!
Oh, are you okay? Oh.
I just glanced off there.
Oh, no, it's fine. You can't see bone. You're cool.
Okay, but it's bleeding down my leg. Should we do something?
Oh, no, I wouldn't. This
way. Oh, come on, muscle it out. You're good. Can you help me back
yeah,
to the
sure.
Thing?
Okay.
Good. All right, there you go.
Something that makes things more funny is if we do it faster. So, how about if we do the same scene, exactly the same scene, in half the time?
Half the time. Splitting wood, half the time. All right, that way. So, 15 seconds, same thing, give us 10, and then 3, 2, 1. All right? Tell us when to go.
Oh,
hey, guys, good job here in
the wood lot. Yeah, hey, yes.
No. That can be funnier. Same scene, half the time, we'll challenge ourselves, round down, so 7 seconds. Same scene, 7 seconds. Go ahead and tell us to go.
Oh, jump in! Hey,
we got lots of wood. Oh, my knee!
Oh, you're wet! Come on. Oh, my knee! Oh, my knee!
Spelltron 3000. We will spell and define words that you give us, made up or not, and do it like that. So, could I get a word, made up or not, to spell and define?
Just shout it out there.
3000. Wow.
Maybe a little bit slower.
did you have one up here?
Any word at all?
English?
Phalaenoptis. Is that okay? Phalaenoptis.
Phalaenoptis. P H N
I
L
O
P O S N S. Phalaenoptis. Phalaenoptis. Something
that
you
wear
when
you
want
to
go
out
and
dance.
Phalaenoptis.
Okay.
Espargato.
E
S
P
E
R
C
T
R
O
E
O.
Espargato.
Espargato.
When
you
like
to
go
in
a
car
and
drive.
Espargato.
Boobalicious.
Common word in the English language.
Boobalicious.
Boobalicious.
B.
O.
B.
U.
O.
L.
Licious.
Boobalicious.
Boobalicious.
Someone
that
you
use
to
buy
things
from.
In
case
you
need
things.
Now we're gonna
change gears a little bit.
We're gonna
do something in a different language.
Could
I get a suggestion for
a
language? Any
language?
Sanskrit.
Okay.
Swahili.
Swahili.
Okay.
We'll do
Swahili.
Swahili.
Can we get a word in the Swahilian?
Swahili?
In Swahili.
Yeah.
Any word?
Chunga.
Chunga.
A tribal word.
Chunga.
C
H
U
N
G
A
A.
Chunga.
Chunga,
when
you
want
to
hunt
bear
with
a
stick.
Chunga!
One
last
one,
back to
English.
Let's
get one from
over
here.
Made up
word?
Oh.
A
made up
word.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Yeah.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
S.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
We
don't
know
what
this
means,
so
we
will
stop.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
I think Steve's going to stay with us here, and please welcome to the stage Holden's post-die Chris and head librarian Mark.
Many crazy things that will keep me loving you. And with your permission, may I list a few. The way you wear your hats. The way I sip your tea. The memory of all that. No, no, they can't take that away from me.
The way a smile just be. The way you sing up key. The way you haunt my dreams. No, no, they can't take that away from me.
We may never, never meet again on that
bumpy road of love.
But I'll always, always keep the memory of
the way you hold your knife.
The way we danced until
the way you changed my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me.
No, they can't take that away.
They can't take that away.
No, they can't take that away from me.
From me.
Not from me.
Not from you.
Not from you.
Not from me. That's right. Not from me. That's right. You're beautiful. Thank you.
One of the things that's always been a staple over a lot of the years here at Holden Village was Wes Priebe's Dead and Dying Soldier, and I know a lot of folks would remember that. And we lost Wes 2 years ago, and just ask that everyone remember him this evening and that his memory continue to live on here at Holden Village. And our teaching staff geologist this week, Don Coberly, has a reading he's going to offer, and Wes is mentioned in it, and I'll let Don introduce it.
I wrote this story back in the spring of 2000, and I spent the fall of 1999 and the spring of 2000 overseas in Indonesia. And it was one of the more memorable times in my life. And I had a blast doing it, but everything about it was new. I was working with new people. I was doing new things. I was in a new culture. I was trying to learn a new language. And I found myself getting lonely for those things that have some longevity and some depth with me. Things like family and friends and familiar places, and one of those familiar places is Holden Village for me. And then later in the spring of 2000, I got the news that Wes Priebe had died, and so I wrote this story. And this story is in the format of a letter from me to him, so the title of the story is Dear Wes. Dear Wes, I first heard about your place in the spring of 1997. My boss called me in and informed me that I'd be heading to the Holden mine site for about 6 weeks of work, investigating the groundwater at the abandoned mine. She mentioned that it was supposed to be a pretty place and that the old miners' village had been converted into a retreat center run through the Lutheran church. She told me that one of my coworkers, Bob, had just come back from there and could fill me in further. So, Bob, what is this place, like a big halfway house for stressed-out Lutherans? No. You know, everybody I met there was really normal. Bob's always been known to be charitable. Bob told me I'd have to drive partway there and then get on a ferry. He then launched into a description of an epic 6-hour-long bombardier ride up the snow-covered road from the ferry landing. He was accompanied at the start by Susan Briel and her two girls. Since they'd already endured a full winter of epic bombardier rides, they bailed out about halfway up the hill and walked the rest of the way. Leaving Bob and a couple of others to finish the trip along with their equipment, David Campbell's bass fiddle, and some fresh-cut flowers for the transition dinner. Bob's hand was in a brace. He'd pulled some ligaments chopping ice from whenever the bomb got high-centered. He finished his saga with a course-by-course description of the transition dinner, which by his ranking was the best meal ever served anywhere. Each of the next four times I talked to him about Holden, we never got too far along before he'd ask, "Did I tell you about the great meal I had up there?" So, Wes, I came to your place in May that year with a group of coworkers, and on that first bus ride up the hill, I was touched by a strange spirit and made a snap decision that since I was going into a new place where nobody knew me, maybe I could act in ways that aren't really like me at all. For starters, I decided that I would act like I was comfortable and confident about being there, that going into a community of new people was something I did all the time. I decided that I'd sit down at a table of strangers and say, "Hi, I don't think we've met. I'm Don, and I'm with the folks investigating the mine." I figured if I just did that enough times, nobody would recognize that I am a timid introvert by nature. And the only thing I find more terrifying than meeting new people is, well, nothing. We had a grand time that spring, being in a beautiful place and doing fun work. And the community seemed to take to us. They'd invite us to a dance or a staff social, and we'd show up and have a great time, and then they'd say, "Thanks for coming." We came back from working on the tailings piles one day, and there was a softball game going on out on the village green. I asked someone waiting to bat what the score was, and she said, 29. As usual, they asked us to join in. As it turned out, people could be on the batting team for a while, maybe hit two or three times, then go play in the field. First base was on top of a six-foot-high snowbank left in the shade of Lodge 4. Since my roommate had been enlisted by a villager to be a server at a party later that night with an ancient Roman theme, the picture I have of the softball game includes him leading off from the recycling cans that had served as second base, wearing sandals and a toga. I think that may have been my first only at Holden moment. And I hate to have to tell you this, but one of the player's main goal while batting was to try and hit a softball through the apartment window on the top floor of Chalet 3. Worst off, that player was one of the directors. I'm not naming names, but I bet you can figure out which one of the directors he was. In the fall, we came back for more work, and I was in the library one day and came across a one-page story that's a favorite of mine, so I asked how I could do a matins. Getting up in front of a group and sharing a story was not like me at all, not in those days anyways. Well, I shared the story, The Lesson of the Moth. It's written by a cockroach for his friend the cat, and it's about a moth, and I know it doesn't sound like it makes any sense. But it's from an old book, and it was a week that an elder hostel group was in the village, and some of them knew it, and everyone seemed to enjoy it. I came back for more work in the spring and early summer of 1998. During one of those visits, a friend told me some terribly disturbing news, and it dredged up a tragedy that happened a long time ago that I was a part of. So that night after Compline, I sat in the balcony of the fireside room and told my story to another friend and cried while she held my hand and listened. It's not like me at all to do that. The last time I cried was when my best friend died, and that was on Halloween in 1990. I was at your place for Thanksgiving that year. It snowed 20 inches the night before I got there, so the village looked like a come-to-life Christmas card, only better. I got to play in a basketball game the first afternoon of my visit. It's the most dangerous thing I've ever done in the village. Apparently, certain Lutheran precepts about kindness and tolerance don't apply on the VC basketball court. I got beat up so bad that I couldn't go tobogganing down Chalet Hill the rest of my stay. I did work in the kitchen on Thanksgiving morning. I got more positive feedback in 4 hours that day than in 10 years as a geologic consultant. That was nice. It also got me to thinking that maybe I needed a new line of work. During the afternoon session the next day, I was up in the balcony of the fireside room and glanced outside to see it snowing the largest flakes I'd ever seen. I snuck outside for a minute, and the village was so quiet, I was pretty sure I could hear the snowflakes piling up. I came back in the summer of 99 to be on volunteer teaching staff. I was in the village for July 4th and marched in the parade as part of seven of us from the teaching staff, with big face paint whiskers as seven seals, sort of like the Book of Revelations. Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time, and I thought, another only at Holden moment. Sadly, the event was captured on film, and seeing the picture later and knowing how many advanced college degrees went with the folks in it, well, somebody could make the argument that a lot of money was wasted on higher education. I read a story at the variety show that night, maybe you remember. I walked up on stage and read a story I wrote in front of a couple hundred people. Well, that's not like me at all. I'd never done that before, and the only two people who'd even seen the story were my roommate and my mom. Well, my roommate, he's got a heart of gold, and mom has a long history of complimenting my creative work, even when it isn't very good. Mom, this is for you. So you made me a picture of a bird. Thank you. Thank you so much. Mom, it's a turtle. And an excellent turtle it is. Well, I shared my story and people seemed to like it. It wasn't until about 3 months later, when I was thinking about it again, that I got the shakes and a cold sweat about what I'd done. Since I was in Indonesia at the time, in the tropics, my crew feared that I'd suddenly come down with malaria and were naturally concerned. I tried to explain panic attack, but due to the language difficulties, it started to sound kind of like possession by evil spirits. So we settled on it being caused by my eating bad fish. I was back in Indonesia this spring when I found out about your passing. A P.S. in an email my roommate sent me. P.S. Rick L. sent me an email saying that Wes Pries passed away, apparently after a brief illness. My roommate's got a heart of gold, he's just not very good with names. He and his girlfriend were at the village for this last New Year's and actually stayed in your room, even though they're not married. But he proposed to her that weekend, and they're going to get married in September. I expect in 10 years' time they'll be bringing their kids to the village. The news of your death hit me real hard, way out of proportion for someone I only knew a little bit. Of course, I was totally bummed when Jerry Garcia died. Actually had to leave work for the day, but that's a whole another story. Earlier in my overseas trip this spring, I had a premonition that a friend had died. I was sure that a woman who's sort of an adopted extra mom to me was gone. Well, it turns out she's fine, but then I got news of your passing. A couple of days later, I was sitting by a stream in the jungle. I was waiting for it to rain so I could start my scientific work. I was reading a book on spirituality because, well, I was hoping some of it would stick. Then the thought of your death came back to me. Being where I was, the refrain from an old John Prine song came to mind. The chorus refers to the Wabash River. That's part of what brought it to mind, I guess. So I sang it to the amusement of my Indonesian guides. I smiled on the Wabash the last time I passed her. Yes, I gave her a wink from the passenger's side. My foot fell asleep as I swallowed my candy, knowing he was in heaven before he died. And then I started to cry, but caught myself, and you know, that's more like me. I kept myself busy for a while by starting to write this story in my head. I was working through it some more late that night, looking up at the stars. In a rare confessional moment, I set out into the night. You know, God, I'd take it as a personal sign that Wes was with you and he was okay when I was distracted by a shooting star tracing a long streak across the nighttime sky. I was a little humbled when I finished my thought, which was that Wes is with you and he's okay if you'll show me a falling star. Some years ago, I spent a long night talking with a friend. Earlier that day, she'd received the news that her brother had died in an accident. We talked for a long while and decided that a mark of a well-lived life, and maybe something that we could strive for, was to leave as big a hole in as many people's lives as we could when we died. I think I've been really fortunate, maybe even blessed, because so far in my life, I've gotten to know a few people who are like that. But you know, Wes, what came to me that afternoon sitting by that stream in Indonesia was that I'd never met anybody before who both left so big a hole and at the same time left so much behind. That makes you unique in my experience. It seems kind of like a paradox. The book I was reading at the time talks about when you look to the center of spirituality, you usually find paradox. I'd like to say that if somehow I could see you in the village one more time, maybe I'd check in with you a little deeper than I did the other times we talked. But I try to tell the truth when I tell stories, so I suspect that if I did see you again, I'd probably just nod or say, "Hey, Wes," and keep heading towards work, or the snack bar, or the basketball game, or the first aid station after the basketball game, or wherever else I was going. But I wish somewhere along the line that I'd said thanks. Thanks for writing those letters to the mining company a long time ago. In that book I was reading by the stream in Indonesia, there's a line attributed to Mother Teresa. "In this life, we cannot do great things. We can only do small things with great love." So thanks, Wes. I'd rate what you did as more than a small thing, and I know you did it with great love. Every time I come to your place, I meet friendly and wise people, see new memories made, and almost always have another one of those only at Holden moments. I sometimes think about the twists and turns that my life has had to take to make it possible for me to find out about your place. The odds are astronomical. But then again, what are the odds that you'd wind up in a story along with Mother Teresa and Jerry Garcia? Whatever the odds, coming to your place has sure worked out great for me. It's worked out great, even if when I'm at your place I don't really act like myself, and even if I still haven't met any of the normal people Bob told me would be there.
Close to the end of our show, before I introduce our last act, I just want to thank everyone who participated tonight. And then I want to say a special thanks to our tape ministry people who are always behind us and always doing it. Holden Village is blessed with a plethora of great musicians, and a whole bunch of them have come together to finish our evening. And so I invite you, it's going to take them a few minutes to get set up, but to sit back, relax, and enjoy the great music.
Okay, Holden's greatest hits over there. See how are things mixing? Check, check, check. That's pretty good. Can you hear over there? Well enough.
Okay, I usually don't play with this big of an ensemble. We're going to do a couple songs that I wrote, and I've got Gary Sontum over here on bass. Rich Arneson on percussion. Steve Wolbrecht over there on the keys, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we were kind of practicing some songs, trying to figure out what to play earlier. Oh, I forgot to tell you who I am. My name is Jeshua, and I'm not going to go in the whole spiel about how it's not Joshua, and if you get confused, you can just call me Earl. Okay, anyway, we were talking about what to play for this, and Gary said, why don't you play that love song that you wrote? And this is... probably, well, I'd like to say it's the only love song I've ever written, but Gary thinks I've written more. It's called Someone. Someone make me a lover. Someone make me a mountain. Someone make me an old tree that I can climb. Someone make me a lover. Someone make me a mountain. Someone make me an old tree that I can climb. Someone hold my hand, please. Someone hold my heart. Someone give me a reason to sing. Someone give me their friend. And I'll give someone mine. Someone give me this life here, and I'll be fine. And I'll be fine. Someone make me a lover. Someone make me a mountain. Someone make me an oak tree that I can climb. Someone make me a lover. Someone make me a mountain. Someone make me an oak tree that I can climb. Someone give me a kind word. Someone give me a warm embrace. Someone give me a kiss here on my face. Gentle as the sunlight, as evening draws near. Gentle as the heavens and the sky so clear. The sky so clear. The sky so clear. Someone make me a lover. Someone make me a mountain. Someone make me an oak tree that I can climb.
Someone make me a lover. Someone make me a mountain. Someone make me an oak tree that I can climb.
Thank you very much. This next song is called The Images of Madness. And it's a song that I wrote. Actually, I haven't told this story before, but for the longest time, someone had given me a poem about an alien, and I was trying to turn it into music, and I had spent probably about a week trying to turn this alien poem into music. It had been getting really frustrating, and it really wasn't what I wanted to write about. and so I put it down, and then suddenly, I mean, I'd been playing music in the street as well in downtown Seattle at Pike Place Market, and doing that day in and day out for the time that I was waiting to find out whether I was going to come to Holden to work as a bookstore coordinator. this song is sort of just kind of what poured out of me after trying to work on this alien song, and it's about the images of working and singing at Pike Place Market. It's kind of an abstract song, but it captures the beauty and the insanity of being on the street and being in the midst of homeless people and their stories. No illusions about the slowly dripping water. It's filling up the bathtub with the words he thought he taught her. They said they saw her leaving, walking down the mountain. But I know that what they're seeing is a picture in the fountain. It's
believe yourself and wonder about the things you know for sure. She said she thought she knew him, but he knew there was no cure. Soon my life is over with nothing left to gain. These are fingers in the anchors, and the anchors hold the pain. Well, the beggar on the water thought he had a daughter. He saw her picture in the paper, the empty and its slaughter. The lady with the plastic thought her days were over. But the images of madness, the images of madness, the images of madness were hanging on her shoulder.
Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you. We're going to send you all off with a song that Gary would like to do to bring us all back to that core of spirituality that is holding. They're going to pull it together here. Steve, do give us a little bit of that interlude stuff, maybe.
Hello?
It's been a pretty fun day. I had a good time. So I'm going to teach you the chorus of this song. It's called The Lord is a Rock in a Weary Land. And this chorus goes, The Lord is a rock in a weary land, weary land, weary land. I said the Lord is a rock in a weary land, shelter in the time of the storm.
Want to try it?
Lord is a rock in a weary land, weary land, weary land. I said the Lord is a rock in a weary land, shelter in the time of the storm. Let me tell you about the number one, when the Lord God's word just begun. I say, hey, let me tell you about the number two, when the Lord God revealed the Bible to you. I said, let me tell you about the number four, when the Lord God rose from the dead. I said, the Lord is a rock in a weary land, weary land, weary land. I said, the Lord is a rock in a weary land, in the time.
Thanks a lot.